Hey friend, do you want to offer meaningful learning solutions that create behavior change, fit in the flow of work, and yield real results for your nonprofit? If yes, this is the podcast for you. Join me as I explore instructional design and leadership development best practices, as well as change management, belonging, and influence. If we haven't met yet, I'm Heather, and I've been in your shoes. I'm a learning and development consultant and founder of Skill Masters Market. Before starting my business, I led learning and leadership development initiatives for a large national nonprofit. I know what it's like to need to develop your staff quickly and effectively and to build the relationships and cut through the organizational layers to be successful. And I'm bringing all of that to you in this podcast. So block your calendar, turn off your Teams or Slack chat, and let's dive in. It's learning for good.
One of my favorite things is when a nonprofit comes to me with a strategic plan that specifically mentions developing their people. Like, they have elevated training, leadership development, organizational culture, or a similar need so much that they've written a goal about it. I love this because I know they are serious about it. I know that they are willing to invest their time and their energy into it. But this isn't always the case. And yet, nonprofit organizational development and learning and development teams are still tasked with developing their people just the same. That's why today's episode is so important. Regardless of whether learning and development has been written into your strategic plan or not, learning and development has a role to play. So in today's episode, Carol Hamilton and I sit down to discuss the strategic planning process and how you prepare staff to implement once your strategic plan is done. I can't wait for this conversation. Let's dive in. It's learning for good. Hey, before we jump in, let me ask you something. Have you joined the Nonprofit Learning and Development Collective? It's a free virtual community of nonprofit talent management, DEI, and learning and development leaders. And it's intended to help you solve your toughest problems together by exchanging ideas and collaborating with your peers. It's a great place for conversations just like this one. Like, hey, we created a strategic plan. Now what? If you're not already a member, grab the link in the show notes and come join us today. All right. Welcome to today's episode. Your nonprofit created a strategic plan. Now what? With Carol Hamilton. Carol Hamilton, Principal, Grace Social Sector Consulting, LLC, and host of Mission Impact Podcast, facilitates whole brain strategic planning, impact mapping, service audits, and organizational assessments for nonprofits and associations. She combines left brain strategy and analysis with right brain wisdom about human complexities for a proven whole brain, whole organization process through which every stakeholder thrives. She is also a part of a consultant collective focused on diversity, equity, and inclusion that has a particular focus on racial equity, all in consulting. This is a two-way conversation between me and Carol, really talking about what happens after you complete your strategic plan, and I can't wait for you to hear our conversation.
Well, Heather, I'm curious, what drew you to the work that you do? What would you say motivates you, and what would you describe as your why?
Yeah, so I am motivated by a few core beliefs. I believe that people excel when they know what is expected of them and they can show up authentically at work. I believe people are worthy of investment, and I believe investing in your people makes them feel valued and gives them new skills and a new passion for their work. And I believe organizations are better when they empower their people to operate from their strongest capabilities. And so that's why I personally work relentlessly to create dynamic, people-centric solutions for nonprofits and associations. I want the solutions to be both strategic, supporting the organization, but also compassionately human-centered, supporting the people themselves. And I want nonprofits and associations at the end of the day to have exactly what they need to support their people and move their mission forward.
I love that combination between the strategic and the human-centered. That's definitely something that I'm always aiming for as well.
Probably won't be the last time you hear that.
Enabling people to, well, I don't know whether it's bringing your whole self to work, but bringing whatever part of yourself that you want to work, and then being fully supported in what you're being asked to do.
Absolutely. But Carol, I'd love to hear a little bit about you too. Tell me a little bit about, I generally ask about people's career journey, but share a little bit about your journey to where you are, how you ended up here, and why you do what you do.
Yeah. So after college, I worked at an organization that helped people get on talk shows, but we did it for all comers. And so quickly after that, I decided I really wanted to, if I was going to be doing something like that, and I wanted to do it for organizations that I supported the mission of, and so shifted into the nonprofit sector and worked for a variety of organizations over the course of my career with those human-centered missions. And I continue to really enjoy working with organizations that center education and helping people thrive in their human capacity. But over time, just became more and more interested in really what helps organizations work more effectively so that we can really move that mission forward strategically. And so over the last several years, I've been a consulting to nonprofits and associations, helping them with strategy, strategic planning, mapping their impact, doing audits of their services, and then also organizational assessments. And I really enjoy doing all of those things to, again, try to help the organization hone in on what's really their core competency so that they can be less stressed as they try to move their mission forward.
That's always a good thing, right? A little less stress. That never hurt anybody. So I love what you do. I think that what we do complements each other so well. You really help the organization set that strategy, be really clear about what they're trying to accomplish, and do so, like you said, in a more effective way, hopefully a stress-free or at least less stressful way.
Probably not stress-free.
At least less stressful. That's the goal. And so then I help organizations take that strategic plan, prepare their people to implement. And so we're so complementary in our work, and I love that. I know you mentioned that one of the things you do is the strategic planning process. What are some of the challenges that you see when it comes to actually implementing that strategic plan after it gets created?
Yeah, and I think those challenges are part of the reason that strategic planning gets a little bit of a bad rap. People are always like, we went through that whole process and then the plan just sat on the shelf, or probably more appropriately now today, sat in a Google Drive or sat in a Dropbox folder and never was referred to. And I think it's that moving from the process to then, how are we putting this into practice? How are we actually going to implement? And so I think making that translation, taking the time to think about how are we going to bring this into our regular planning processes, into our regular meetings, what's the cadence that we're going to be doing that, all of those kinds of things, asking those questions and having a plan to implement really supports an organization making the most of the time that they've spent together to identify what's really important for them to move their mission forward over the next couple of years.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You do all the work. A lot of the focus at the time is on the plan.
Right.
If there's not a plan to then implement the plan, if it's not then integrated into your existing plans, processes, then it makes sense that it's kind of set on a shelf.
Right. Yeah, I think the integration is really the key thing. It's like, how are you integrating it into how you regularly work rather than thinking of it as something special?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And what do you recommend for nonprofits to overcome that? Or what have you seen them do in the past?
Yeah, a couple different things. I think the first is for that implementation plan, being realistic about the time frame. So your bigger plan may be that medium term time frame of 3 to 5 years. But the implementation plan really needs to be a shorter time frame. It could be 6 months. It could be a year. It really depends on the organization and its cycles and what makes sense. And then for that plan, that's where I recommend that people get into the real nitty gritty of who does what by when and how, all of those kinds of things. Because so that year one or year six, first 6 months, you're getting into those details, planning that out. And then having a process to say, okay, we've come to the end of this time period. What did we actually manage to accomplish? What do we still need to do? What is less relevant or what might need some tweaking? What have we done that we didn't expect to do? And so asking those questions on a regular cadence and having a way to track and then do the next 6 months or the next year implementation plan where you get into that nitty gritty Because I think one of the challenges is when organizations try to nail everything down for that entire period. So they're trying to, and that's where it starts ending up feeling a little ridiculous. Can't actually predict what's going to be happening 3 years from now. So don't waste your time trying to nail that down in terms of the specifics.
Yeah, that makes sense. When you put it into that detailed of a plan, you have something that you can, that can help guide you as you're implementing. But like you said, it also allows you to go back so that you can see, am I on the right track? Are there things I need to adjust? And doing that in those smaller increments makes a lot of sense. Have you found that nonprofits have a lot of success with that?
Yeah, I think when they're able to make a regular practice of it, know what's expected at that check-in, do that within their regular meetings, whether it's a staff meeting or at a regular cadence at a board meeting and or both, knowing what part of the plan is the board is responsible for, what part of the plan is staff driven, and then just having someone be the champions and make sure that they're doing that as well, all of those things really help. And then realizing that it's not just about checking off what you've done or doing. I've seen a lot of groups have that green light, yellow light, red light of like where things are in terms of progress, but also having those questions in mind so that you are making those adjustments as needed.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Do you wish you could connect with other nonprofit learning and development leaders? I know what it feels like to want someone to bounce ideas off of and to learn from, someone who really understands you and your work. Imagine if you could have a simple way to meet people in the field, ask questions, and share information. That's why I created the Nonprofit Learning and Development Collective, where nonprofit, L&D, talent management, and DEI leaders can connect with each other quickly and easily in a virtual space. When you join this community, you will walk away with a new, diverse, and powerful network and a sounding board for your staff development needs. So if you're ready to exchange ideas and collaborate with your peers, come join the Nonprofit L&D Collective.
So part of going into implementation, sometimes there's a new initiative or something that really needs some extra support for an organization to really make it happen. You work with creating training for nonprofits and association members. How do you see training actually supporting the implementation of a strategic plan?
Yeah, so I typically look at a three-pronged approach, and it does all go back to making it strategic and compassionately human-centered, as I said in the beginning. It's very, very important to me. So the three-pronged approach that I typically take is you want to make it relevant, you want to make it meaningful, and you want to make it fun. And I'm going to define what I mean by those because some people probably just went, fun? What? So I think it's important that we define each of those. So the first was make it relevant. And that to me is where you really go back and you look at that strategic plan, you look at the things you said you really need to accomplish, and you look at other kind of supporting documents in the organization. What is your mission? What is your vision? What is your DEI commitment? Those kinds of things that also impact the work that you do. Review all of those things and identify the skills that your people are going to need to be successful. And start with skills. Skills is always the kind of the driver for any kind of training if you want to see a behavior change. So identify the skills that are going to be needed to deliver on that strategic plan and continue on with your mission, vision, and DEI commitment. And then compare those skills to your learner's current skill set. So where are they now and where do you need them to be? And that change, that shift, that gap is what you want to focus on to make the training relevant. The next piece is to make it meaningful. And so this, again, it is a little bit more of that compassionately human-centered piece. If it's relevant, it will already be meaningful because it's going to impact them in their role and their job. But you also want to take the time to build cross-functional relationship, trust, psychological safety, all of those kind of foundational things that need to exist in the organization for the change to be done. And any sort of opportunity that you have to bring people together, whether virtually or in person, is an opportunity to build those cross-functional relationships, to build that trust, and to build that psychological safety. So yes, there are self-paced training options out there, But a lot of nonprofits and associations are running in-person or virtual gatherings as their training option. And so there is a huge opportunity to build that trust during that time. And then the last is to make it fun. And again, I use that word. I laugh every time I say it because sometimes people think about forced fun, which is not very fun. But what I mean by that is to do something unexpected within the experience. Design that training so that there is something unexpected so that they remember what they are learning. And you can do that in a variety of different ways. I've certainly used improv in a very light way. It can be intimidating for somebody who is not used to improv, right? But if you do it in a very light way, then it can be fun for people and it is memorable for people. You can use outside tools like Kahoot brings in a game experience, or you could use Mural or Miro where they're working together collaboratively in a different way, right? There are different things you can do, different elements you can bring in to make it just a little bit playful. And then they're going to remember what they're learning and be better able to actually change that behavior, bring the skills that you need them to bring in order to execute on that strategic plan.
I love all the parallels between the actual planning process. I always want it to be for people to tell me that it was fun, that it was unexpected to them because they might have been dreading a strategic planning process. But what you described in terms of kind of the relevance, meaningfulness, and then fun, and that gap between, okay, what are the skills at the individual level? What are the skills that are needed for this initiative? And then at the individual level, for me, there's a lot of like, when you look at that gap, it essentially, it's what the whole group has done as a cross-functional group through the planning process. So when I'm working with groups, I really want them to not have it just be a top-down kind of process, but really have it be a whole organization process. In some cases, when the organization is really large, that might be a slice of the organization. So people representing the various constituencies and levels and stakeholder groups. But then you are looking at what is the current state? Where are we right now? And where do we want to be? And what's the gap in between? What do we need to do? So there's so many parallels. And then with what you were describing in terms of training and how that can really support the plan moving forward and the actual planning process. Because one of the things that I always hear from clients is that by bringing people together, mixing them up into different groups, there's all sorts of other benefits that come out of the planning process because people get to know each other, get to understand their work better. But I really feel like thinking about what the skills that are going to be needed in a plan is probably a missing piece that very few organizations are actually looking at.
Yeah, I would agree. I think I have seen strategic plans where there is a people component baked into it, which is amazing. So fun to see. But even if there's not, there's probably something in there that's going to require something different of your people. And if that's the case, there is always room for skill development.
Yeah, oftentimes the people piece is right. We want to have a thriving, healthy organizational culture, but really getting into what do people need to be able to know how to do to make this a reality. Oftentimes another goal might be something around fundraising or working on board development. And all of those things end up clarifying roles and responsibilities, depending on what the stage of the organization is, where they are in the life cycle of the nonprofit can all be different. But I love the piece about really honing in, and probably because I came out of a learning background before I did this work, one of the things that I always have people do is make sure that we cannot have an action step without an action verb. It's like doing yes. learning objectives.
yes, absolutely. I agree there.
Yeah. So when have you seen organizations take that next step of doing that analysis of the skills and what are the competencies that we have now and what do we need to be able to move folks forward to be able to actually get this plan done?
Yeah. I love it when an organization brings me in at that point in the process because it really does set you up for success. Like you said, they're coming out of the strategic planning process where they've been really collaborative, hopefully. And they've been hearing from people and they've been taking a different approach to their work in some cases. And then coming right behind that and saying, now let's do the same thing for your people. It's just a nice flow and it sets people up for success from the very beginning. So I have seen organizations do that and that I love that. I think a lot of times it's a little bit later down the line when they realize they're ready to scale a program or a service or launch something new, and they realize there's going to be a gap in their people being able to implement that thing. And so it's a little bit later in the process. It's a little bit harder to go back and really capture that analysis and the energy that's already coming out of that strategic planning process. So I've seen it both ways. It's still doable. The other way, if it's a little bit later in the process, definitely still doable. It just might feel a little bit like you're taking a couple steps back before you can move forward.
And I feel like for me, as I think about projects moving forward, as I help organizations map out that implementation plan, certainly coming out of this conversation, one of the things that I'll be adding is, what are the skills that are needed to move this forward and help people even start to think about it? Because I think it's not necessarily a top of mind conversation for most folks.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things we're talking about training today, but one of the things that I do is custom competency models. And that's a great time when you're getting ready to implement a new strategic plan. That's a great time to either create or revisit your existing competency model, because you are able to say, okay, this is where we're headed, and these are the skills that we need people to have in order to achieve that. And this is what that looks like, that one skill, right? One skill can look different to different people or in different roles. And so a competency model allows you to define what that skill is going to look like at various levels in the organization. And then you can build your entire learning strategy around that competency model, which is built around where you're headed as an organization.
And I've seen those on the association side built for the field, but I've rarely seen them built for the people inside the organization.
Yeah, they work well in both scenarios.
And for smaller organizations, what are some ways that they could tackle this, that there's a level of sophistication and resources that you need to be able to do some of those things? Are there some kind of smaller chunks that they could bite off to get started?
Yeah, I actually, and this might be contrary to what other people would recommend, but I actually would recommend a competency model for a smaller organization, as long as they have staff in place or a set of volunteers in place, because it does define the skill. You can always go and look for off-the-shelf training to help develop a particular skill, but if you don't know which skills you need, then buying a particular training isn't going to be all that helpful. So while a larger organization might say, we want the custom competency model and we want the custom training because we're going to be training hundreds of staff over the next year or whatever the case is, a smaller organization, taking the time to identify what those skills are that are going to be needed will allow them to be more particular, more strategic in what professional development they invest in the future.
Yeah. And if you want to start not have to start with a blank page, what's coming to mind for me is the standards of excellence for nonprofit organizations, where you have an entire comprehensive set of standards. Few organizations go through the full accreditation process. A lot of other organizations use it as an assessment of where they are and would help them pull out those competencies. So that you're not having to figure it out. There's very little that hasn't been done before. So don't feel like you have to go it alone or start from scratch.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what final words of advice for nonprofits creating training to support strategic planning and implementation do you have?
Yeah, so I think the first, and we've talked about it a little bit already, is listen to your people. So if you're going to be creating training to support strategic plan implementation, you have to know where your people are and where they need to go. So talking to senior leaders, asking supervisors, holding focus groups with the staff that are going to be impacted by the change, and really listening is a great way to understand what the gap is that you're going to need to fill. And then the second piece is, remember the change component of this. If you are doing anything different, there is a change, and there's always something different in the strategic plan, right? So tap into people's motivations. Why do they care? Why would they even want to make this change, behavior change, whatever it is? Make sure they have the skills, which is where the training helps, and then surround them with the resources that they need to be successful.
Yeah. And again, there's so many parallels to the actual planning process of starting, not starting small, starting larger, where you're really listening and hearing from mapping out a map of stakeholders and constituencies that you have, and then getting that input from them, figuring out how to pull their voices together so that you can make some decisions about what you need to do moving forward. And yes, I think people hesitate around change, or are at the top can feel like they've communicated enough times around the thing. And then I think there's a lot of, it can be a little, become a little bit of us and them, of the people who want the thing, the people who are quote unquote resistors. And it goes back to listening, to hearing really what is getting in their way, what hesitancies do they have, so that that can be integrated into how you're supporting them with the resources that you were talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. Part of surrounding them with resources is absolutely removing barriers. So you have to understand what they're experiencing in order to really make those changes. But Carol, I'm curious, any words of advice from you? Any final words, I guess, of advice for nonprofits undergoing the strategic planning process?
Yeah, I think the starting with the whole organization and really thinking about how the whole organization is contributing to the planning process. And I think that also supports implementation, because when people have been part of the process, they see themselves in it. They understand why decisions were made a certain way. They're more ready to roll up their sleeves and get ready to put the plan into action. And so while leaders can might feel a little intimidated by, well, if it's just this huge cacophony of voices, how are we going to actually make decisions? But there are ways through a good facilitated process to ensure that you have a succinct plan at the end and folks know what they need to do.
Absolutely. And I definitely see that in the needs analysis side on competency models and training as well. So like you said, there's just so much overlap in the way that we work, the process that we use, and then so much good complementary pieces to it as well, starting with that strategic plan and then moving into what do our people need to be able to implement that?
Yeah.
Carol, it's been so fun to have this conversation with you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I definitely. And talk about change. You're going to be helping me tweak my practice in terms of working with organizations in that implementation planning phase.
I love it. I love that. Is your nonprofit or association creating a strategic plan or supporting implementation of one now? I'd love to hear from you. What tips would you offer? Head over to the Nonprofit Learning and Development Collective and share with us there. And if you're looking for support in implementing your strategic plan, head over to my website and let's work together so you get the exact solutions you need to achieve your organization's goals.
Hey friend, was this episode helpful for you? Did you like what you heard? Do you want more content like this? Here are three things you can do. Hit subscribe. Leave a review on Apple Podcasts or your podcast app of choice. Share this episode with a colleague. This means so much to me personally. I read every review, but it also helps me learn what content you like most so I can create more of what you want. All right, turn that Teams or Slack chat back on when you're ready, and I'll see you next time on Learning for Good.